Welcome to another episode of the Rugby League Outsiders. This week we're going to chat to Jed Corcoran, who's the head coach of Irish Rugby League. He's also got a huge history in the game. Jed comes from Ireland and moved across to England when he was just 5 years old, and he talks a lot about his struggles there, getting into the game, not being selected for the Irish team by Darrell Powell, and also the honour of playing alongside huge players like Barry McDermott, Tez O'Connor. Just a really, really good episode, and it's all for our St. Patrick Day's special. Okay, Jed, thank you very much for taking a little bit of time out of your busy day, because I know you've got a busy day doing your training here at the training for the Ireland squad. I just really want to get a bit of an understanding of your background and your route into your coaching position with the Ireland squad.
Started back in 2004, so I'm currently on my 20-year anniversary this year. Funny enough, ironically enough. Started October 2004. Missed out on selection for the European Games with Darrell Powell, and it came to selection process, and one of my teammates at the time, Halifax, got picked, and I got missed out, and I've been chasing that dream for 2 or 3 years prior to that, and when he got picked and I got missed on selection, I queried it with Powley, and there's a funny story to it with Powley. I rang him, they were on the way back from Swansea after playing Wales, and I were a bit hot-headed on the phone with him because I naffed off and upset I wasn't picked or selected, and Powley just, it's a simple fix, Jed, come down to training next week in Leeds and we'll have a chat, bring your documents with you and we'll get you signed up and we'll get you playing. He said, I love everything about what you are, your passion, how you've just spoken to me on the phone. Not many players in my career already have challenged me like that, but and the rest is history. Went down to Leeds, met him, introduced me to the squad. I knew some of the players anyway from playing against or playing with, but just getting to meet your players, Barry McDermott, Shatteria Connors, established players like Phil Cantillon, etc. It was a wide, rude awakening, and one that I was, really excited about. And then, 20 years later, I'm now head of my national team, and very proud and feel very privileged to be in this position after representing my country. Not only getting to play for your country, but to coach it, it's just something different.
Was there ever a time when you thought, like, rugby league will never really get established in Ireland, and, glad now that it has?
Yeah, it's still slow progress. There's a lot of good people involved now. There's been great people involved in the past, in my time, but just not the continuity needed to get us where we're going. And the people that we've got currently involved from the board level to the grassroots games, is that they're good people and they want the same thing that we want from an elite performer side of things, and they now see and trust that there's a process for players to be selected, because I do believe, not now but in the near future, that we do have a number of homegrown players that can represent our national team at the highest level.
Can we talk a little bit about your background and your route to England, and then have a look at your playing career as well?
Yeah, my dad's an ex-serviceman, left the Irish Army. I moved to England when I was 5. That was a big transition in itself. Different country, different way of life. We were typical Biffos, big and ignorant effers from Offaly, like, in Tullamore,
Biffos.
The Biffos, yeah, that's what I was always renowned as, the Biffo, and that's just an Offaly term and, typical country thing. But, it was a tough transition. I remember being kids, going to school over here was completely different.
Yeah.
Having the way teachers were different, the kids were different. We were brought up and I stressed brought up in a traditional Irish household, strict mother, firm father, discipline and all that was in place, and respect, and then there was different concepts of stuff from friends and people that we were hanging around with, but it's something I've never regretted. It's something I've really enjoyed coming across. I've lived in different countries, but moving over here at 5, it was a tough transition for us as a family, but one that we had to do and one that we've done, and one that now I'm settled with my own family, and something that I regularly speak to my daughter and my son about, and the wife's a big part of it as well. She has no choice really, because she's been part of it for a long time, but the kids are very proud of the heritage, especially my daughter's mad on rugby league, especially the national teams, and she's an encyclopedia of rugby league. You know, she knows all the NRL players, NRLW girls. You know, she's like an encyclopedia on rugby league. And, you know, I often joke saying you should have been a boy, but, you know, she's a very proud woman with her own beliefs and a very strong mindset. And I'm immensely proud of both my kids. But, you know, it's been a bit of a whirlwind. You know, I sometimes pinch myself coming from Ireland to here, and the ways of life have been different, but one that I probably never change. You know, yeah. I've enjoyed every minute of it, to be honest.
Jeb, what was your route into rugby league? What age did you start playing?
Probably about 7 or 8. Funny enough, the wife, the father-in-law, was my first rugby league coach. I never even dreamt of settling down with a wife or having, you know, we were just friends for a long time and many years. But yeah, the first coach I had, Bob Smithies and Dave Reed, were my first coaches. And I remember sitting down on
what,
the field.
What club was that?
Spotland Rangers.
Right.
Spotland Rangers. They don't exist anymore. They went out a long time ago. But, you know, I sat on the bank for 2 or 3 weeks trying to build the courage up to get involved. And then I go home telling my dad about, oh, dad, you know, it's different. It's like Hurley and Slater, but it's like football, but it's not football. And he couldn't grasp what I was trying to get to. He said, come down next week, dad. And he finished work. He took me down. We sat on the bank in. And then Bob Smithies came over and said, son, do you want to come and join in? I've been watching you sat on the bank for weeks. And, you know, do you want to join in? And my dad said, get in there, son. You know, go and show them what you got. And I ripped in and I fell in love with it instantly. Just fell in love with the camaraderie with the lads and the joking were different to school life. And, you know, just having that same thing in common just really got us on the same page and never looked back since.
It's mad how, you know, that moment there where your coach came across and just said something and your dad give you a little nudge, you know, go give it a try. If that never happened, who knows
where
you'd be now. And do you have visions of being that person for other people now?
Yeah, you know, my ethos is I want people to have the experiences I've had. Not just in life, but through the game. And the great experiences that this game gives you, you know, going to different countries, meeting different people, getting to understand different cultures and, you know, how you embrace them as a person. But yeah, you know, I'm big on giving people opportunities or wanting people to have the same opportunities that I had, but even, you know, bigger and better opportunities. Why not? You know what I mean? Why stop someone from daring to dream? You know, the ceiling's the limit or the sky's the limit, as they say. I use terminology, the ceiling's the limit, but go and maximise your ceiling, go and reach that ceiling, and then the rest is yours, you know what I mean?
And I can see that in your coaching. We've been watching you sort of coaching the students earlier. Obviously, you're a first team coach. You know, how much does it mean to you to bring the pathways through the students of Ireland?
I think it's important that they get, like, I don't think of myself any different to any of the other coaches, Glenn,
yeah.
You know, Brendan, you know, I don't see myself or feel any different to any of them. I think it's important that the players see that we're all one.
Yeah.
You know, that they're approachable, I'm approachable, and vice versa. I think it's important as they develop and they come through the age groups that they get that continuity with them coaches as they step up. Our system's the same system. The calls are the same calls. You know, the terminology and expectations are all the same. You know, whether you're playing students, whether you're playing the 16s, the 19s, you know, the A's, the women's, you know, the senior men's, everything now is unified as one. And I, it's funny because the media picked up on it in the World Cup. Well, why are you picking those shields up? And, you know, the national head coach, why are you doing that? Well, why shouldn't I do that?
Yeah, yeah.
What makes me any different to my assistant coach, Joe Callan, or, you know, to my team manager, Adam Bates? If they're good enough and capable enough of doing it, why shouldn't I do it? And I think that sets a demeanour amongst the players that, as coaches, we're not above and beyond in terms of mucking in. You know, we're big on housekeeping and the way we find things and big on impression, how people, you know, perceive us as a national team and a national program. So I thrive off how people think, you know, what you're saying there, how I am with my players. There's a lot more coaching involved at these levels than there is at the senior men's because obviously the professional players are playing at an elite level, but it's important that they get the same love and get the same expressions and the same detail that what I give to my senior men's players. So their journey is easier, you know, they integrate better and easier with the other players, and then the journey on them is just as they step up is evolving the skills at every level they go up.
Jed, obviously the culture of a team is massive, and this seems bigger than a team from, you know, from looking at the outside this time. It's, you know, you've got the women sport very well, very proud, you know what I mean, very excited about the future. Obviously, you've got a load of students out there as well that are obviously really keen to get stuck in. So what is the, if you could describe the culture, how would you describe the culture of the Ireland team?
Our culture, we're a very proud team, we're a very proud country, but as a country in ourselves, We're a very patriotic country. You'll see St. Patrick's Day, it's celebrated globally. You know, it's around the world. It's not just in Dublin. It's not just in the UK. You go to America and it's if not bigger over there than it is in our homeland. But, you know, we're a very proud and very passionate country, you know. And that's something I breed in or, you know, emphasise within my coaching philosophy is that, and I used it when they laugh and joke now, they take the mic, but, you know, when I first met my playing squad going into the World Cup prep, I had one session with the World Cup team leading up to going into camp for the World Cup, believe it or not. Nobody know, not many people know that except for the players, but when I sat down, the boys, and they were actually in Hopwood College here, you know, we greeted here, and in that one session, and I used the terminology, if we were going to war like any other country is now, I'd be at the front of the queue. I would be ready to take the bullet for my countrymen and countrywomen as the next man would. And that's the mindset I need you to understand, is that we're all equal, we're all here for the same thing, to experience the same thing, but also fight for the same thing. So, yeah, I'm a very proud man, I'm a very proud countryman, and, you know, I've got the values instilled from me, from my parents, because, again, I was brought up and not dragged up. And I think that's just a cultural thing within us Irish people. So, again, everybody knows everybody within our Pathways programme from the 16s up to the seniors. And I think it's important that they do understand who those players are, because even though we want them to idolise them, I think it's important that they understand what strengths they've got as players. Not that we want them to mirror them, but we want them to be better than them. So we've got that production line constantly coming through. So, yeah, you know, I love my players. I love my staff. You know, I don't treat my players and staff any different. I'm firm but fair and firm but kind. But I also respect everybody, you know, from players to staff. But, yeah, you know, we try and evolve every year. We're evolving this year. As I've just said out to the boys outside, you know, we need to level up this year. We had a great introductory last year. You know, it's the first time we've implemented everything at Pathways level. And we had a great year. You know, it's the closest we've come to winning the Four Nations for a long time in the Pathways, and if ever. And, you know, we were a couple of points shy of winning it at the 18s, 19s. And, you know, that was making a legacy in itself. And as I've just challenged them outside there, that was last year. That's forgotten about now. We're on to this year. And this is what we're about, making memories and, you know, creating our new legacy for going forward. And it's funny because some of the boys that have been picked up off the programme from last year, now they're in academy setups. They've signed semi-professional contracts. And, you know, it's nice now to see that our family's growing, not just at grassroots level, but in the professional game. And for me, it just stamps the flag in the ground even more and makes it more firmer that you can create a journey and a dream out of, whether you're a boy like Ronan Michael from Balbriggan, or, you know, like myself from Offaly, and you can come and get an opportunity to play the greatest game in the world.
Mm-hmm. What are the immediate goals then for Ireland in the next? So immediate goals and then future goals for Ireland.
My personal or as an organisation?
No, as an organisation.
Continuity. I think we need to improve the standard of the game, for one. I think the level of the competition back home, the depth of that competition, you know, and then from an international perspective, is produce those players into international honours. You know, that's one that I'm very firmly, you know, driven towards. You know, just off last year's Pathways programme, I could easily handily pick 11 players from grassroots level last year.
Yeah.
But the concerning figure on that for me is, out of those 11 players, how many are actually playing the grassroots game?
Yeah.
That's really worrying for me. You know. And us coaches trying to push them into clubs, our biggest hurdle we have back in Ireland is that they play rugby union, they play the hurling, they play football, and the personal endorsements they get from that, it's hard to compete with.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming up against big organisations, you know, players were getting told off last year for playing rugby league. They were falling out with the clubs, but when they picked up their rugby ball and came to the first league session to try out, they had no intentions of staying. But once they came to the first session,
yeah,
at Kildare, they fell in love with it instantly. Yeah. And that's where the friction started with the clubs. But so again, I'd like to see a bit more continuity. I'd like to see a lot more good people come in at the grassroots. I don't like calling it domestic. It drives me mad. Because what's drove me mad over the years is that we've had the segregation of domestic and heritage. For me, if you're Irish, you're Irish, and you'll always determine whether you're an Irishman or not, or an Irish woman, a lady or not, because if you play for World Cup, you'll come back the year after, and then you'll come back the year after. And we've had plenty of players like that, but we've also had the number of players that just want to turn up for World Cups. And I get that, and we've got to understand that.
Yeah.
But for me, they're the ones that caused the political debate. And that's something that I quashed out last year, and I challenged the players in the World Cup year, is that I'll judge you not just off this year, I'll judge you off next year when you come back. And if you don't, I promise you for a fact I'll cut you.
Mm.
We're making the decisions. Us as coaches are now making them decisions. You as players have had control for too long. We as coaches are going to make that decision now as performance. And I'll judge you as a countryman if you come back next year. And let's just say we had a lot of players after that World Cup year wanting to play last year, and you know what happened last year, and you know hopefully we can get back on the horse this year, and the club support the players, shall I say? And let's see where we go.
Jed, if you could cast your mind back over the last, you know, as long as you've been involved with the national squad, what are a couple of standout moments where you thought, you know, I'm really proud, or this, you know, this memory will go with me for the rest of my time?
Yeah, there's my debut, Scotland in Navan, which I'll take to my grave. It was a very special moment, not for me, but for my family and the bloodline. But the World Cup year in then away, you know, when I debuted in a World Cup and got to play against some of the NRL stars and the world-class players that were on stage that year. And then becoming, you know, the national head coach was an immensely proud moment for me under difficult circumstances, because coming through and working with the coaches that I worked with and a close relationship with them, I loved it and embraced it, and we had great connection as coaches. But there was always that missing factor of being Irish for me, you know. And understanding your own culture is a big thing, and that's something that I've inlined with us as I've took over. But yeah, I've had many personal moments, great moments, great teammates, great coaches, great great staff members. But I just think the international debut and then becoming national head coach is two of the specialist things, apart from having me two kids, are probably something I'll take to the grave.
Yeah,
to the day I die.
Tell me a few details about it then. Tell me, take yourself back there.
To your debut.
Plus playing for Ireland, what was your feeling? What was it?
Flying over was a bit surreal. Up to that point, I'd not done much flying because we used to get the ferry to and from, because it was cheaper as a family. But flying was a very big privilege for us as a family, because both my mum and dad were grafters, and which I love and respect them for, because it puts that, it instills in you as a person. Yeah. It's important that you recognise that. But the journey over on the plane and the intensity around the quality of training from club level, and the calibre of players you're playing with. Like, I idolised Barry McDermott and Terry O'Connor as a kid, and they're not much older. They're only 10 or so years older than me, or 15 years older than me. But watching them as a childhood player and then getting to meet them and then getting the honour to play with them, that was surreal in itself. And Baz got me my debut year. So we were in Navan and we'd been swimming, part of a recovery programme. And we got back to the hotel for a bit of lunch and we were sat there and Baz was sat across from me and we're having a yarn and having a bit of a chat about training and life and him getting to know me and me getting to know him. And then off the cuff, he just slammed his fork and knife down on the table and went, "You're looking at my eye." And I went, "No, Bas, no. And nearly fall backwards off the chair. And he went, "Ah, I got you." And that was just a way of making me feel comfortable. Because even though I was comfortable in his presence, I was still a bit starstruck by him because of the calibre of player he was as a player. And I idolised his game because he was an enforcer. I loved the rivalry he had with Fielding. Every game they played and every minute, I would just, trying to crank it up to get a reaction out of them both, and loved the punch-ups and loved the high shots that Baz would clip him with every time, and he'd come out wearing a whopper of a black eye. But again, it was that. And then Tez is the opposite. When he's on, he's on. There's no messing around, and he's serious and it's work mindset. But away from the ball, like, I roomed with him a few times. I got the honour to room with him, and just some of the chats we had, personal chats, he was just overwhelmed. Like, very, very business mindset, very family, he's a big family man like myself, and, just setting himself up for after rugby and, his thought process around life, it really puts things into perspective. And little things like that helped me on my journey become a little bit, a bit more selfish in terms of what I wanted to get out, what I wanted to get out of, and it just giving me that clarity, made things a bit clearer, made me want it a bit more. Daryl Powell's a great coach, good people, man. Breaks your role down within the team.
Was he your coach in that year?
Yeah, my debut year, 2004, he was the coach. And Andy Kelly was the assistant coach. And Kel did some great things over the years for Ireland. He took us to the World Cup in 2008, made a lot of sacrifices that year, family, birthdays, anniversaries and stuff. And it's the players and then, some of the players we've had over the years have been unbelievable. Some really good marquee players, quality world class players.
Who did you enjoy playing with most? You know, if there's like one guy on the field who just like couldn't do, he could do things that other people couldn't do.
I just liked Baz and Tez whacking people. I just like enjoy carrying off the back of them because it made my life easier. But we had, you know, you Scott Grixies, your Liam Finn was a maverick. He's been a great servant for Ireland Rugby League, which, you know, I'd love to put on record. Grixie was the same. And what you've got to understand is that the players we've had over the years, when they start, you know, we had Benny Curry in 13 World Cup and then he got pinched by England. And that's been always the case with our players. The temptation of the devil is and always will be the money and the elite performance in terms of what England can provide compared to what we can provide.
Yeah.
You know, I'd blow your socks off and say that our players haven't been paid for a number of years. You know, that my players didn't play in the World Cup for the financial gain. They played to represent the heritage. And, you know, and that's the conflict that we've always had. And that's the conflict now I've got as a coach. And, you know, it's hard as much as they believe in what we're doing. It's hard because when you're fighting against the financial odds and there's always going to be the winner when it comes to money.
Mm.
But yeah, there's been some great people over the years in players and staff. And a lot of people, I've done a lot of unrecognised hard work and never got mentioned. And, you know, it's important. Like now with my staff, you know, or I shall say our staff is, my staff don't do this for financial gain. I don't do it for financial gain. People think I get paid a lot of money to do what I do and give up my Sundays and weekends and weekdays, planning and prepping and, you know, Zooming with my players and staff. And that all cost me personal time, emotional time and financial time, which I don't get reimbursed. You know, people think that I'm getting paid a triple figure salary to do what I'm not Andy Farrell. You know, I'm not in the RFU, but I do what I do because I'm a proud countryman and I believe my short-term sacrifices will be for long-term gain. And there's a lot of people over the years that have done a fantastic job but never got the credit that was due. Because as a national team, we've never been given this spotlight to discuss things like this. And I think stuff like this is really important to recognise them important people. And it's always the players that get spoken about, but it's never about the people behind the scenes that do great work and do the stuff that keeps this sport going.
So, Jed, is there any people you want to personally acknowledge, people from your team or, you know, and what your people from the past do? You've sort of mentioned there that, you know, there's people in the background who've done a lot of work for Ireland, never really had a mention, so you know this is probably a perfect time to mention them, really.
Yeah, I think all the past players, you know, they've got us where we are today. Without them, I don't think we'd have the platform we have, and I don't think they've ever been publicly thanked.
Yeah,
you know, to deliver and put the bodies on the line for an organisation that they play two or three games a year. You know, I can't thank them enough. You know, players that I've played with, players that I haven't played with, players before my time. I'm very thankful, and we as an organisation very thankful to them, thankful to the ex-coaches and the previous boards. I'll stress some, but then, you know, and welcome to the new people coming through. You know, that's exciting. You know, I'm very thankful to my staff. I've got a great bunch of staff who are all honest and they buy into what we are trying to do as an organisation. You know, and again, as I stressed before, they don't do it for any financial gain. It's a lot of stress and a lot of time that they could be giving the families and personal time themselves, but they choose to give it up for Ireland Rugby League, and, you know, because they believe in the journey that we're on and where we're going and what we're doing.
So just looking forward then, you know, what excites you about Irish Rugby League?
The players, our homegrown players. You know, yes, you know, we've got players globally, but I think what we've got on our island, you know, we need to give them a better platform to keep developing. But it's them homegrown players and grassroots players that really excite me. You know, we've got grassroots coaches, you know, Wayne Kerr, you know, we've got people that are on the community panel, you know, that are helping develop the game. But there's hundreds of players there that are just hidden, not exposed or been seen yet. And they're just waiting for it to happen. But what I will say to them players is don't keep waiting for it to happen. Make it happen. You know, it won't happen unless you decide or choose to come and make it happen. Come to that first session. I promise you'll fall in love like every other player that has fallen in love with after that first session. And what excites me is that continuity then, developing homegrown players. You know, I think, as I said before, not now, but I think in the next 10 years, we might be in a position to field a full-fledged homegrown national team in a national program, which would be very flattering as a national team, and very patriotic for them players. So that's what drives me, and that's what excites me over the next 10 years. Whether I'm part of it or not, you know, if I am, all well and good. If I'm not, I'll still be supporting my country and the players that'll be pulling that green jersey, because there's some things in life you're honoured and being able to do, and some things that you're privileged to do. And I think getting to put that green jersey on, which you're right, they're wearing now, and it looks good on you, by the way.
Fully invested, mate. I've got no Irish in me, though, whatsoever.
It's a special thing, and once they get to do that, you know, it's the life will take care of itself.
If I said to you, where would you want Irish rugby to be, Irish rugby league to be in 10 years, where would you like to see it?
On the elite programme, playing against the best, you know, with the best, you know, what, you know, I want us to be playing in the best tier competition possible.
Yeah.
But it's all right willing or wanting to play at that elite level, but without having the stability underneath, it don't mean nothing. So again,
the full package.
I want to be at the top in 10 years or 15 years, but I want to be able to have the continuity for each age group and have the depth of players to select from. So people don't get stale, or they don't take the position for granted that they're going to get picked. I want to have that the competition. I want them to feel pressured, and I want them to feel, oh, these kids are coming through from the 19s, and I've got to keep playing well. And you know, so that's what I'd like to see in 10, 15 years, is that we've got each age group fulfilled in the performance and our elite level, that, and we've got depth to pick from for each age group, you know, 50 plus players for each age group, 60 players, if not, you know, basically what they do in the NRL, and not be like them, but want the same depth and pool of players. But by doing that, we've got to develop what we've got on our island at home and make the grassroots game better, you know, upskill the coaches, which I'm currently working with them coaches on a CPD program, is how do I help them as coaches plan, review, you know, preview sessions. How do we then integrate the video sessions and stuff like that? How do we implement getting the clubs? So the board have actually implemented camcorders and laptops now to the clubs, so that, you know, so they can start looking after their own stuff. And with the guidance of our coaches and myself, that we can upskill them, and they're upskilling, help upskill the players and play at a different level.
Well, Jed, it's been brilliant to chat to you, you know, not only about your playing career and the people you've played with, but, you know, your passion for your national team and the position you've got in that just oozes out of you. And it's been, you know, I'm pretty sure Kyle will agree, we've both buzzed off, you know, what you've been talking about. So good luck in the upcoming campaign and with all streams of Irish rugby.
Yeah, no, thanks for having us on, guys. And, you know, to finish off, we have a motto within our organisation, in Art, Gakurla Kaila, no strength without unity. And, you know, we all get branded, believe it or not, we're like cattle in that respect. We all get branded. I've got it on my arm, some lads have it on the chest, some lads have it on the back, some lads have it on the calf, but it's something that they all look forward to having. You know, they have having that motto, it means something. It's inside the collar of the shirt, you know.
Yeah.
You know, on the training tops that we have the number 32. You know, we have the four stripes, we have the four lines for the, you know, and it's little things like that that means a lot to us. You know, it's the 32 counties and four provinces, and, you know, the little detail that I've changed and implemented in my time. But, you know, coming on here and you guys give me the chance to speak and give that proper image to what the hearsays and hearsays are saying outside of our circle, and the damage that they're causing to our sport, you know, that needs eradicating quickly and swiftly. But, you know, getting the opportunity to talk with you great chaps, you know, helps that and helps promote the positivity around our sport and our game.
And I know we was wrapping up, but has Ireland had a bad image put on it? Is that something that's happened that you think is unfair?
Yeah, massively unfair. You know, it crept in during the World Cup, and one thing that's left has left a bad taste in my mouth and still leaves a bad taste in my mouth is a number of people that see the game differently to what, you know, we as coaches and we as an organisation, and I say we and not I,
yeah,
because I can't do this on my own, and, you know, I say we because we're all in it together, but there's a number of people that have set up platforms, they've gone round the houses and that are telling a lot of lies, using the manipulation of ex-players or ex, you know, to create negativity and create problems instead of coming to the source. And when they tried to come to the source and come through me, and I didn't agree with them because I'm not a yes man.
Yeah.
And I factually told them the facts around what I believe and what we believe as an organisation. And because we need to line up on the same page, they've gone off at track and tried to manipulate the way in around the houses, you know, and it's it's just wrong. You know, you're preventing players, their decisions are impacting players playing for a country, or girls from playing for their country, and, you know, young boys playing for their country. And, you know, it's just, it's a bad light that the game doesn't need, or at international level doesn't need, because we all live in a pressure cooker as it is, and we just don't need that outside noise for me.
No. Well, Jed, I mean, we've spent the day here at the Irish camp, and one thing I would say is everybody who's come on board and we've spoken to just oozes pride to wear that green jersey. And like I said, like Craig said, it's been great to speak to you. And I wish you all the best of luck in the future years to come.
No, thank you. Thanks for having us. Just like to thank our partners, you know, our personal partners of Ireland Rugby League, Premier Kia in Rochdale, support us massively. You know, O'Neill's our kit supplier, ATAC Sports, Manuka Roofing, I know who you'll know very well. You know, we've got some great partners on board. We're building. We're trying to, include new people into our program to support. Hotwood Arcology, that support us with this training elite program, which is fantastic. For me, it's one of the best programs in the Northwest. If you're a student or you're looking to get a student, get to Hotwood campus. You know, it's a great facility. So, you know, thanks to you guys for having us on.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers.
That's the final whistle for this week's episode of the Rugby League Outsiders. We hope you've enjoyed it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and share this podcast with your friends. And as always, if you have a story to tell, a club to plug, or a player that deserves recognition, we want to hear from you. So until next time on the Rugby League Outsiders, take care.